Good morning, Your Honors. Once again, Carrie Loring for Secretary James Peake, and with me at council table is Deputy Assistant General Counsel Brian Ripple. As an initial matter, I'd like to address the court's concerns in its November 19th order. And the subject matter of your order, which was questioning jurisdiction, and clearly it is this court's, it's incumbent upon this court to determine in the first instance its own jurisdiction. And it's the Secretary's position that you do indeed have jurisdiction over the effective date issue under 7252A because there is a final board decision. Notwithstanding the earlier argument.
Yeah, how does that square with your argument in Roebuck?
My argument? Well.
The Secretary's argument in Roebuck, whom you represent and whom was represented by the General Counsel in Roebuck.
Well, in Roebuck, the Secretary conceded there are different theories of the same disability. In this instance, we have distinctly different disabilities. We have distinctly different claims with respect to peripheral neuropathy.
Let's assume we're only talking about the claim for peripheral neuropathy, the one that was the claim stream that began in 1989.
Peripheral neuropathy,
and it seems to me that that's the argument here, is that the effective date for peripheral neuropathy should revert to the date of the filing of the claim in 1989.
Yes, that's appellant's argument. However, the claim for peripheral neuropathy wasn't originated until 1990.
Okay, I understand that's the Secretary's position, but all I'm saying is with respect to jurisdiction.
Yes.
The issue that he's raising is that that the Secretary has made a mistake with regard to the assignment of the effective date, whether it be right or wrong. That's his. And yet the Secretary is still adjudicating another portion of this claim, which is the rating.
The rating, that's correct.
So, in effect, so the Secretary has not completed the administrative adjudication of the entire claim.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay,
however,
now tell us why that does not translate to no jurisdiction for us over this matter.
Because under the Federal Circuit's line of cases, as well as this court's line of cases, it is clearly within the board's discretion to make a decision on one
element of that claim. In that case, then why did you make that determine? Why did you make the argument in Roebuck? The Secretary make the argument in Roebuck that your position is based upon the fact there's a final board decision, and that's what 7252 says. Well, there was a final board decision in Roebuck too, and the Secretary came in and argued, said, "Hey, it's the first final decision on a claim that governs, and the second final decision was ultra vires." That was the Secretary's argument.
But the Roebuck, well, it's also the Secretary's position that Roebuck doesn't apply in this instance. Roebuck
Explain that to me.
Because under Roebuck, it was based on theories of a claim. In this particular instance, the Secretary's position is that while Roebuck may inform in terms of what constitutes a claim for disabilities versus theories of disabilities, the Secretary would argue that Boggs is controlling here, and under the Federal Circuit's decision in Boggs, it is the diagnosis that is based on a distinct factual pattern and the disease that determines the claim, not the theory of the disability that is.
So every time that there's a new diagnosis, evidence of a new diagnosis, that is evidence of a claim? That becomes a claim?
Not necessarily. It depends on the
diagnosis. So in this case, right? Let me ask you this. I know I'm interrupting you, and I apologize for that. But in this case, when would you say the claim for peripheral neuropathy arose?
When appellant filed his claim on February 15th of 1994. And as you noted, Your Honor, this case has a very long and somewhat torturous history. But if you apply an analysis to the actual facts of the case, it's very straightforward. It started with a claim.
Well, excuse me. Has she responded to your question?
Well, I'm just, if I could, just, I'm trying to find where this claim was in 94.
In 1994, there were parallel, the claim for peripheral vascular disease
right.
had been adjudicated.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, it was denied as, on a direct basis, appellant in his initial notice of disagreement to the RO's decision said, no, wait a minute, I have Agent Orange exposure. How can you say this is not
right.
Service-connected? So the RO, in turn, adjudicated it based on exposure to Agent Orange. In the interim, Mr.
Well, where's the claim?
Pardon me?
Where's the claim?
Where's the claim?
He wrote in and says, look, you disposed of this, you denied it. I think it's related to Agent Orange. That sounds to me like a theory.
But that claim, that portion of that was a claim for peripheral vascular disease, and that claim was adjudicated and it was denied on both bases, and it went to the board.
I don't see any final denial of the claim. I see them saying, yes, there we've denied peripheral peripheral vascular disease. Let's call it theory or diagnosis or whatever portion of this claim, but then he keeps filing NODs. So I don't see any while this thing resolves itself to peripheral neuropathy later on. But it's still the same.
Or is the secretary's position that he has more than one disability?
Oh, absolutely.
So there's PVD and peripheral neuropathy as the secretary's
position. I apologize
position.
If I've not been clear, but the secretary's position is that there are two distinct claim streams here. The claim for peripheral vascular disease was adjudicated as that was pending, as his appeal of the peripheral vascular disease claim was pending. His attorney submitted a statement saying that he had a new diagnosis of peripheral neuropathy. And while...
How does that all of a sudden become a claim?
Because he sought service connection for peripheral neuropathy, which is a distinctly different diagnosed disability. It rests on a distinctly different factual basis. Under Boggs, it is a disability that is based on a different factual basis. The claim for the secretary's position, there are two distinct claim streams here. There's the claim for peripheral vascular disease, which was denied, but he appealed that. I mean, he had two claims at the same time. I mean, they're very distinct disabilities. They're distinct anatomical regions of the body. They're just one is vascular, one is neurological. They may have overlapping symptoms, but they are very different diseases and disabilities, and therefore, and they were adjudicated differently.
The is that a formal claim he filed or an informal claim he filed?
He filed
when he submitted the medical evidence that it was that
the attorney filed a statement saying this has been this which was peripheral vascular disease has now been determined to be peripheral neuropathy, and basically his argument obfuscates the whole procedural process because
I'm not sure it complicates the picture, right?
Well, Your Honor, if you review the actual, and I'm sure you have, the attorney's or the appellant's argument when he filed the claim for peripheral neuropathy is when he said, oh, no, I have peripheral neuropathy.
Right.
That's what I've had all along. However, there is nothing in the record that determines that it was, distinct.
I understand all that. Let me get back to, I want to find out why you think, what makes the fact that he filed a statement with a new diagnosis a new claim?
Because he actually filed
he didn't file a claim form.
A VA form. I believe that he did.
If he did, then I'm mistaken. Please show me.
Court's indulgence, I have to go through my chronology. In March of 19... 90, he filed in it the notice of disagreement to the denial of the peripheral vascular disease. In April of 1993, excuse me, at 344,
right,
he restated his claim
with
for
PVD,
specifically for PVD. And then in February of 94, he submitted a statement saying, I want to clarify, I have new material evidence. My claim for PVD is now a claim for peripheral neuropathy. I have a new diagnosis. So
how did that become a new claim?
Because he requested service connection for a distinctly different disability.
He says, I want to clarify my claim. I've got new evidence.
But the RO properly found that it was a different claim and adjudicated accordingly.
That's one of the problems. If it seems to me, I don't see that they ever said, okay, you have filed a new claim, and this new claim is for X, and processed it that way. They continue to process, and I'm not saying that in the grand scheme of things this is wrong. We're looking back at it, 10 years later. But what happened was that they, it seems to me, this is the same from the appellant's perspective, from Mr. Burkowski's perspective, this is just the same claim floating along, and I don't see any distinct, from looking at the record, which is, I guess, about 1,000 pages long here, I don't see any distinct break to make that. Now, maybe I'm pursuing a matter that's really just a matter of interest and not a matter of consequence, so I've already
I would refer you back to the record because there are, the RO did adjudicate them differently. The RO issued a rating decision in 93, at record at 408, denying service connection for the peripheral vascular disease. It had not yet adjudicated and denied the peripheral neuropathy claim. That later came in January of 1995, a record at 417.
Okay, Counselor, let me go back to what Judge Hagel was pursuing, because I think there's probably a disconnect here somewhere, and I think we better get it straightened out. The court is here today on the issue of peripheral neuropathy.
That's correct.
Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. The board has established the fifth element of the claim, which is the effective date.
That's correct, Your Honor.
However, the remand has been made for the degree of disability, the fourth element of the case, and that is still pending. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So we don't have a finally adjudicated claim. There are five elements. Now, I think we all need to understand this very clearly. There are five elements to a claim, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. So we're now dealing with one of the five elements of the claim on remand and one consuming this court's time. So it's not a finally adjudicated claim as defined by the statute, so therefore we have no jurisdiction. Now, that would be my view of that, and I'm interested in hearing your response to that.
Well, yes, Your Honor, the Secretary's position is that you clearly do have jurisdiction.
Because that
element of the claim is subject to adjudication and finality under the Federal Circuit's line of cases, particularly.
So you would have us adjudicate five elements each time a claim is filed. There's an appeal available on each of the five elements so that we can do that. Now, somehow that just doesn't make any sense to me.
No, I would agree, and that's not what the Secretary is suggesting.
Well, you're saying that we have jurisdiction over the fifth element of this claim. On remand, we have the fourth element, so we can spend our time on the fifth element today, and then the Secretary is going to reach a decision on the fourth element, and then I suppose there'll be an appeal that we can also argue about at some future date.
Well, no, Your Honor. Under the Federal Circuit's case law and under this court's earlier decisions as well, the issue is what is the claim, and yes, it contains five elements. However, the Federal Circuit has held that the board can decide different elements depending upon whether or not there is an adjudicative determination that would affect, and in this instance, the effective date clearly does not have an impact on the issue below, which is the initial rating. And
what cases specifically would you ask us to look at?
Ephraim and... Ephraim and... I beg your indulgence, I have to...
Sure, that's fine.
Notes.
Take your time.
The whole line of cases, Elkins, I believe, Elkins v. Gober, which is 229 F. 3rd at 1369, is particularly on point. Elkins follows the line of cases that I was referring to earlier, beginning with Dewey Electronics, 1986, Grantham v. Brown in 1997, and Majeed in 2000, up through a current... which is, Cantus, which is a non-precedential decision, but each of those decisions state that in determining whether an administrative adjudication is sufficiently final for purposes of separating it from the entire claim that is on appeal, the issue is whether the, and I quote, is whether the process of the administrative decision-making has reached a stage where judicial review will not disrupt the orderly process of adjudication, and whether rights or obligations have been determined or legal consequences will flow from the agency action. And that's a quote from the Port of Boston Marine Terminal Association v. Ryder Cabot Transatlantic.
How does the Secretary and the Board process their cases, in which order they decide to decide the elements, you know, other than the jurisdictional elements? It is up to the Board. We're talking about the jurisdiction of this court as defined by Congress, a final claim by the board.
A final decision by the board.
Okay. Dealing with a claim which consists of five elements.
That's correct. But
so
there's also, it's also appropriate for the board to, as you raised in your November 19th order, the question of bifurcation. Clearly, in this instance, it serves the veteran to have the decision bifurcated. In other words, it seems to me that it would, there's no prejudice in the board deciding this element.
Right. No, and I think Judge Lance agrees with that, and the secretary, I think, is, you know, that's a, you know, if the secretary determines that's the way to conduct the secretary's business, that's a good thing, because they're looking out, they're getting these elements of the claim decided as soon as they can, so that the veteran can get as much of the benefit as they're entitled to quicker. And that's a good thing. The question that Judge Lance, I think, is asking, and that's on my mind, is whether or not the court here, whether the matter, the claim, is sufficiently final for this court to exercise jurisdiction over.
And yes, Your Honor, that's the Secretary's position based on those line of cases, particularly Majeed, that you do have jurisdiction. And
if I can interject just to clarify a question I have. The effective date question that is before us pertains to service connection. It does not pertain to rating.
No,
is that correct?
Right. It's a service, it's the issue of service connection for
and the element that was remanded pertains to the rating that should be assigned once
rating.
Service connection has already been afforded.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Thank you.
And
so we would based on the cases with regard to Fenderson and others, with regard to the requirement to consider staged ratings, we would also be faced with effective dates and ratings over the vast period of time here between when service connection was granted and when the effect, when we ultimately the effective date of service connection is determined. Is that correct?
It's correct that stage ratings would be at issue below.
And
however, that does not and would not have an effect on the ultimate effective date of the grant of service.
No, correct, but it would affect other adjudication before the agency. I mean, the determination of effective date here, which is before us now, would have impact on other legal obligations of the parties, the agency, and the appellant.
Only if this court were to find an earlier effective date. However, I would bring you back to Boggs and to the procedure of this case. I mean,
Boggs said that you have separate claims based on separate diagnoses. I understand that's what Boggs said, but I don't see that has anything to do with the other question that Judge Lance posed about we have five elements of the claim and two are in dispute and one's still down at the regional office, and so we don't have a complete claim before us.
Well, I would respectfully disagree. I believe that Boggs does have bearing because Boggs talks about what constitutes a claim for the purposes of adjudication and talks about the issue of finality, which brings us back to the Majeed issue, which is when can you decide an element of a claim? I mean, it wouldn't make sense for the board to bifurcate an different elements that are not, that are independent. In this instance, there clearly is no impact on for this court to take jurisdiction over what is determined a final administrative decision.
Let's talk about a different concept then. Ripeness, the old concept of ripeness, which is designed and approved by the Supreme Court of the United States and probably even the Federal Circuit to promote judicial efficiency so that all elements of one case are basically litigated and before the court, and the court then needs to make a decision which will put to rest the claim or the case. So maybe the jurisdiction, maybe there's a difference of opinion relative to the concept of jurisdiction, but the old standby case of ripeness, I think, is something that we all need to think about just a little bit. Again, how the Secretary decides to conduct his business is up to him, but the jurisdiction of the court and the time and the resources allocated, I think we have a say in that.
Well, certainly I would disagree, but I would also argue that this issue that is before the court today is ripe. I mean, if the court chooses...
The claim is, yes, right.
But the issue before the court is, in terms of whether the court determines today or 6 months from now, depending... I mean, it would also, in the argument in support of judicial efficiency... The issue that is before the court today, once decided, is not going to be back before the court when the rating issue is decided.
No, I mean, well, yeah, though, but even if that's the case, whoever gets it on remand is going to be reading this again and is going to be preparing something like this again and going to be engaging the services of three law clerks again and three judges. So... You know, in that sense, reading all this one time and dealing with it one time is, it seems to me, does promote the efficiency of the court. Now, so I personally don't agree that it's not going to promote the efficiency of the court. Whether that's a reason to do it or not, you know, I mean, our job is to do these things. So I'm not saying that you know we shouldn't. If we should, I mean, if we have jurisdiction, maybe we should do it. But my concerning question is whether or not we have jurisdiction. And given, again, the Secretary's argument in Roebuck that was made to us, quite surprisingly, I might say, and then the decision that came from that, gives me some pause.
Well, Your Honor, again, I would say that Roebuck is a different circumstance, a different set of facts, different issues, a different issue that was before the court. And with all due respect, yes, the record is huge, but assuming, for argument's sake, that Mr. Brokowski is dissatisfied with the ratings that are assigned and that issue is appealed, it would only be as to the rating assigned. The effective date has been settled as far as the board and the RO is concerned.
I know that we've consumed a lot of your time on an aspect that may or may not control the case, and so there's a whole area of the merits of this thing that we haven't touched upon, and so I want to make sure that you have time to talk about that, and to the extent that you go over, we're going to give the appellant sufficient time to be able to respond to that.
Thank you.
And I'd like to turn to the merits. I have a question going back to 1978. The appellant statement included all disabilities of record. He had, at the very least, orthopedic, vascular, and neurological symptoms noted in 1978. why does that not present a pending claim for disabilities resulting from those symptoms?
Because the only disabilities of record at that time were the peripheral vascular disease and the orthopedic, the issue of
The L5.
L5, radiculopathy, which...
Which the secretary also did not adjudicate at that point.
He never sought service connection for his... He was very clear that the history of the case was such that he initially filed a claim for pension, for right. non-service-connected pension. That was subsequently granted, then discontinued because it was over income. In the interim, in June 1978, which is what Mr. Bukowski has referenced, it was a claim for anxiety, depression, and all disabilities.
What does that extra all disabilities of record mean or do?
Well, under the circumstances, under the facts of the case at that time, the only other disabilities, the only disabilities of record were the radiculopathy and the peripheral vascular disease. And he wasn't even, I mean, he was very clear that he was only seeking service connection at that point.
Well, if he was very clear, he would have just said anxiety and depression or whatever. He wouldn't have said, and all other disabilities of record. That seems to imply and more.
Well, even assuming, Your Honor, that he was seeking the other disabilities of record, the peripheral vascular disease, that was subsequently adjudicated.
And so you would argue that that language could have potentially raised a claim for other disabilities, but that those were subsequently adjudicated?
Actually, no, I would not say that.
Okay.
Because all disabilities of record is very broad. I mean, the statute, still going back to the statute, there must be a claim, and I see my time is up, a claim that indicates that you are applying for a disability of a specific disability, or at least relative to certain parts of your body. I mean, certainly it's not incumbent upon the secretary to prognosticate what the appellant is.
Well, I can understand clearly in a case where somebody walks in and says, I have a knee disability, and in their medical record they happen to have a hearing loss or whatever, and the secretary wouldn't think that necessarily that hearing loss is something they're claiming because all they said was knee. But if they say knee, it could imply orthopedic, neurologic, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But here, he didn't just say anxiety. He said, and all other disabilities of record, and you had medical information that contained other disabilities of record. So while we may quibble whether it actually demonstrated peripheral neuropathy at that time or not, he had other things wrong with him than anxiety and depression. And is the secretary's position that just saying and all other disabilities of record doesn't actually evince an intent to apply for any benefits other than what he listed?
Yes, that would be, well, particularly given, actually, I need to retract to some extent. It depends on the facts of the case and the circumstances of the appellant's service. I mean, at that time, appellant service medical records were completely negative for any indication of neuropathy or vascular disease or neurological, radiculopathy.
So the secretary could be guided by in-service symptoms or within a year following service?
Absolutely, as the law states. But that was not the circumstances in this case. And again, I believe that you have to put the...
Because it had been adjudicated as a non-service-connected related thing the year before, does that matter?
Oh, well, yes, because it was adjudicated as a non-service-connected pension claim, and it was adjudicated, I mean, again, in putting the whole record in perspective, if you go back to the procedure, he had claimed non-service-connected pension based on a foot injury, which brought the issues forward. And the RO at that time reviewed the record and obtained all his private medical records, and it was the radiculopathy and it was a peripheral vascular disease. But there was no indication that any of that was related in any way to service. And it wasn't until he actually filed his claim for peripheral vascular disease in 1989 that the issue of service connection came up. And the RO had adjudicated and kept reminding him, you're not eligible for pension, but if you give us more information, we'll reevaluate whether you're eligible for pension based on your income. So it's not as though the RO completely ignored what was going on and didn't try and adjudicate to his advantage what was available.
Okay, moving forward to the 89-94 area.
Before we get to that, I ask one question about this. What is your opinion, what is the Secretary's opinion of the effect of the final adjudication in 1978 and no appeal?
In terms of the service connection for depression?
In terms of everything that
it was a final adjudication and there was no appeal.
Okay, and what impact, if any, did that have on his claims for the three disabilities that Judge Schoen was discussing? His radiculopathy, his peripheral vascular disease, and the peripheral neuropathy.
The denial in June 1978 was only to depression and anxiety neurosis.
If we were to find then that those claims were in fact made earlier or should have been made, then they would have continued into this day? They become part of this claim stream.
That was a final decision. In fact, he did try to reopen that claim later, and it was denied again because there was no new material evidence to reopen, but that was specific to the mental health issue, to the depression and anxiety. I'm not sure that...
So the other disabilities remain unadjudicated? Assuming they were raised.
Well, the Secretary's position is that they were never raised, Your Honor. So
I understand that. But Judge Schoen's, as I understood her premise, or at least the thrust of her questions, was that, well, this person comes in and he says, look, I'm filing a claim for all disabilities of record. And you look at his medical record and you say, well, he's got these three things wrong with him. We ought to investigate those. Now, if you're saying that the only claim that was adjudicated in 1978 was the anxiety claim or claim for mental disabilities of some sort, and we were to find that this claim for all disabilities of record was in fact made, was in fact a claim, a valid claim, then your response would indicate that that claim, the effective date of whatever we might find later on, might well relate back to 1978 instead of 1989.
Well, no, then I would say, Your Honor, that Ingerman, Deschotel, or Deschotel would apply, and whatever implicit claim was pending was denied by that decision.
Okay. When you and Judge Hagel were talking earlier, he was asking what is it that made his claim for peripheral vascular disease distinct from his claim for peripheral neuropathy in 1993-94 time range. One of the things that I've been sort of mulling over is the interrelationship of Espiritu with the requirement to file a claim. If I'm not competent to say I have this disability because I can't diagnose, and I come in and say I have peripheral vascular disease, but it turns out it really is peripheral neuropathy, how does that make it a distinct claim from one to the other?
Because they're based on distinctly different factual...
Well, all I know as a veteran is that my leg hurts and I have tingling and numbness. I don't know if it's because of a vascular condition, or I don't know if it's because of a neurological condition.
No, understandably. However, if the peripheral vascular disease had been diagnosed in earlier on, and that was, I mean, the veteran and that.
That there was medical evidence to support that diagnosis. Is that what you're saying? Is the
yes, but there also at that point he had clarified that that's what he was seeking. I'm seeking service connection for peripheral vascular disease, and I would refer the court to the record.
Right, but again, why would a statement by a layperson, which wouldn't carry any weight in proving that I had a disability, carry weight in delimiting what the world of possibilities are of my disability?
Well, because he was also represented by counsel.
I mean, counsel is not competent to assess that what disease he has.
That's correct. I'm not sure that I'm
following my question.
What I can say is that he had two distinctly different diagnosed disabilities, and when he filed his claim for peripheral neuropathy, he came in with a medical diagnosis saying that he had peripheral neuropathy, and so it was incumbent upon the RO at that point to adjudicate the issue of peripheral neuropathy as related to service. I mean, that the ROVA is going to adjudicate whatever is reasonably raised by the record if it is related to the issue before it.
Okay. Getting back into the fact that he had this diagnosis in 94 of peripheral neuropathy, and the doctor says it turns out that that's what he's had all along. Assuming there was a pending claim for peripheral neuropathy made in 78,
mm-hmm.
Would this diagnosis relate back all the way to 78?
If he had a pending claim which had not been finally denied,
mm-hmm.
Yes. But there is no diagnosis. I mean, as you pointed out at the beginning, and even with Dr. Friend's report, Dr. Friend was is a neurologist, and he had Mr. Brokowski had an EMG back in the early 70s, and at that point, there was nothing to indicate that he had peripheral neuropathy. The only references were Dr. Friend, I believe it was, said it was he had a complicated clinical picture, and because he continued with the lower extremity pain despite a laminectomy, despite a sympathectomy, and ultimately despite the bypass. But it was the medical evidence has been clear throughout that he has had peripheral vascular disease. That has never changed. What became apparent based on the submission in 1994, in February of 94, was the presence of peripheral neuropathy. The peripheral vascular disease has been a parallel disability all along, and it was incumbent upon VA and the board, and then I believe the board has addressed it much better than I have. Their decision is extensive and thorough, and they've addressed every contention raised by appellant in this case. And there simply is no basis for an earlier effective date under the statute. It is when the claim is filed or when the disability arose, if it's not within 1 year of service. And clearly, the claim for peripheral neuropathy was filed in February of 1994, and there is no evidence to suggest that there was an earlier claim. So under those circumstances, the secretary would, again, assuming that the court takes jurisdiction, we would ask that you would affirm it.
What would, let's assume that a veteran is discharged from the service for a personality disorder. And then a year and a day after the veteran's discharge, files a claim. And he says, you know, I got this psychiatric disability. I've had these symptoms all along. I was discharged from the service for it. I want service connection. The VA, doing the right thing, sends him to a CNP examination. He's examined by a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist says, you know what? This guy's a schizophrenic. He's a schizophrenic now. Looking back, he was a schizophrenic then. He's been a schizophrenic, and he developed his schizophrenia while he was in service, and it's clearly related to service. What would be the effective date? And that diagnosis is finally submitted to the RO 1 year after he files his claim. What would be the effective date of that?
The date he filed his claim.
Which would be, why not the date that the final diagnosis was submitted, the diagnosis by the VA doctor was submitted? You had a diagnosis from the service for personality disorder, which cannot be service-connected.
Correct.
And then you have a diagnosis of a different disability, totally different symptoms, acquired a psychiatric disability, given a year after he filed his claim, and yet in that situation, you would clearly say that the effective date is the date that he filed the claim for his head disorder, his mental disability. Where in this case, it seems to me you're taking the position quite the opposite.
Well, I disagree respectfully, Your Honor. They are not. We are still talking about distinctly different.
Okay. Now again, show me in the record. I want to see in the record where he files the document that you say is the claim for peripheral neuropathy.
It is on I would say the record at 373.
That's from
Dr. Friend.
The letter that you're talking about is from his attorney, Mr. Peschiera. He said, by means of this correspondence and medical document and the medical documentation enclosed, we seek to clarify the claim. In other words, we have a new diagnosis. Now, how's that any different from the, hey, I got a new diagnosis of the psychiatric disability?
Because,
I mean, you know, I think what you said is these are parallel things. He's had this disability all along, and all the veteran knows is, hey, my leg hurts like heck.
But it has been, this had been previously adjudicated, in the hypothetical that you're presenting, there was no prior adjudication except perhaps to say that personality disorder is not subject to service.
Well, it's only, I think it would be only previously adjudicated, finally adjudicated, if there was either a final RO decision to which no NOD was filed, or a final board decision to which no notice of appeal here was filed on that issue. And I don't see that in the record. I see the claim continuing to be the claim, and it, you know, you, I understand the secretary would like to define the claim very narrowly based upon the diagnosis that was submitted to the secretary at a particular point in time. But from the veteran's perspective, the veteran's leg hurts, and the veteran doesn't have any, you know, expertise, I think, as the secretary has said many times in adjudication, properly so, to diagnose what the actual disability is. The veteran comes in and is filing a claim for his leg, right?
Yes, Your Honor, but I would also, again, draw your attention back to Boggs because I think the Boggs decision is what is narrowly defining what the claim is, which is, again, here, if you look at the
course,
record.
Of course, Boggs, now, I mean, I'd be splitting hairs, but I'm not sure. Remember, Boggs was based upon what was sufficient to reopen a claim.
It was, Your Honor,
That's after the secretary had already made a final decision on a particular claim with a particular diagnosis. Final decision, done. And so the person comes in and wants to reopen.
I understand that, but Your Honor, the secretary's position is that Boggs has a much broader application than simply the new material and finality evidence. And if you look at the Boggs decision on page 1334, and I quote, the Boggs talks about going back to the Veterans Judicial Review Act and the initial process of the claims process and this court's jurisdiction, and they talk about the provisions of a claim as opposed to a theory of a claim because of the facts of Boggs and the various, that it's not a constellation of symptoms, but it's actually the disability, the diagnosis. And Boggs says they're not imposing a new requirement that a veteran submit a diagnosis by a medical doctor to establish a claim for service connection, but there must be, when there is a distinct disability, then you have separate claims. And again, it says under the symptomatology standard, a later filed claim could be prejudiced by a prior claim merely because the two claims involve diseases or injuries with overlapping symptoms, which I believe is what we have here. And going back to Mr. Fischer's statement on 373, he is seeking service connection for two separate conditions, and he's saying a diagnosis was a medical opinion has been received from Mr. Brokowski's treating physician who specifically identified his disease as severe peripheral neuropathy, a diagnosis from which Mr. Brokowski has suffered since he first applied for benefits in 1976, which is the appellant's interpretation. And then he's saying, I want to be clear, the present claim seeks to reopen the claim filed in 1976 on the basis of new material and more definitive information. However, the claim in 1976 was a claim for non-service-connected pension, which is completely different than the claim that was being adjudicated here, which was the peripheral vascular disease. And also, we seek service connection for the disease which has been identified as peripheral neuropathy, which indicates two separate claims, which the RO properly adjudicated as two separate claims. So I would say, with all due respect, that this, under this fact pattern, this is the claim for peripheral neuropathy, which the RO correctly adjudicated as a claim for peripheral neuropathy, not as a continuation, because we have two distinct disabilities, again, two different parts of the anatomy, two different systems, vascular and neurological. There may be overlapping symptoms, but they are not.
The bottom line is the document on page 373 and its enclosure is a separate claim.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Mr. Sharon, my papers out of your way.
I think you've probably gathered that you'll have pretty much all the time you want.
First, let me begin by just clarifying that letter that I had written in 1993. I did make a statement for a reopening, and I'm now looking back clearly I was wrong. On that, that was just a mischaracterization of the process. That there was never a decision regarding peripheral neuropathy before. Before that time, no final decision, so there could not have been a reopening. So I was just simply just mischaracterizing that. I believe that, I wanted to straighten that out. The question still, I believe, comes down to two questions that I tried to propose initially. The first question that the court must determine in this case is a legal one. Was there, in fact, an informal claim at all? And if we can't get past that, I don't even think the court needs to address what the disability was. And I believe that Mr. Brokowski's statement at that point in 1978 had all the three required elements for an informal claim. And I think this court, acting as a matter of law, can make that determination. Then we can move on. And having given that, now we move on to the disabilities, what are the disabilities, and whether that is enough to establish the informal claim. Now, that raises the next question. Was there a diagnosis upon which they could have been properly notified the VA? Now, this question here, I think, was answered by the board, first of all, when they said that they did not address any other claim other than depression in 1978, And they made that statement in two places in their decision. The disabilities that existed, again, were there to be found if they were going to be looking for other than the depression, which is clearly was not their emphasis at that time. So the error that I'm also stating that the board has made in this case, which was also made by the RO back in 1978 and again in 89, was that they did not give a full reading to the record. They did not liberally read the record, as their duty states, they did not sympathetically read that record for anything other than depression. That was the error. And as a matter of law, that claim, the informal claim exists. Now we can move on. Again, clarifying, there was three claims at that time. The radiculopathy was also a part of the neuropathy. It was also a part of the damage to the nerves. It was extending to the lower back and to the extremities. And I believe that is all part of the same thing, even though it is identified as three separate type of disabilities that he was suffering at the time. They were existing. Now while it is broad definition, the veteran also at that time was pro se, should I add. I did not start to represent Mr. Murkowski until 1993. So in 1978, he was pro se. So any benefit of the doubt has to be applied to him at that time. And as we've said in these prior court's rulings, that any ambiguity as far as what the type of benefits that the veteran is trying to seek goes to the benefit of the doubt goes to the veteran. And the complications that existed with the disabilities then, I think, has to go the benefit has to go to Mr. Murkowski in that effect. But nonetheless, there were distinct disabilities being arisen, especially from the report starting with Dr. Robinson leading to Dr. Friend, who made the determination of what those disabilities were.
Can I ask a question about the fact that you entered into representation of Mr. Murkowski in 93? And in 93, you wrote a letter that was very specific, in that the letter said that Mr. Murkowski was seeking, I'm looking at 345, the document that we spoke of earlier, that he was seeking entitlement to service connection for peripheral vascular disease, and of course, it did add paragraph 6 on page 346, that all issues that may reasonably be inferred from statutes, regulations, and so forth, sort of a catch-all.
Right.
But why should we not treat this document as a narrowing of the claim at that point? In other words, that was where a represented appellant says, look, my claim, now I've got a representative, person that's experienced here about how to help present claims, and now I want to tell you, VA, this is what I'm claiming. Why shouldn't the VA be able to rely on that sort of representation and then proceed on the adjudication on that vein until such time, you know, things change?
Because I believe, Your Honor, the duties to the veteran were different at that time. While he was acting pro se, they got to give greater latitude to what he's trying to do.
Correct. I understand.
Okay. Once I came into the picture, that latitude went away. I was very specific. I knew how to pick up this claim. I knew what was it. I can only justify what my actions were at that time. In 1993, as soon as I saw the file, I knew there was something else about this claim that had to be addressed. And that is when you saw in that letter that that claim for neuropathy started to exist. It wasn't clear, Mr. Murkowski, because he couldn't tell the difference from one from the other. But I knew what was there. That's when the opinions came in to back that claim up, and we took the claim in. Eventually, we won that. But it goes back to why there must be a differentiation, because of when he was acting on his own, as opposed to when I came on. I believe that is where the board's sympathetic reading has to take place. I've been confused at how that's actually been applied.
But why, as Judge Hagel says, couldn't it have been, sure, he raised a claim in 1978 that included peripheral neuropathy, but then when you came along, in a way abandoning these other claims and saying the only thing we're seeking is PVD, and then a year later you say, no, what we want is peripheral neuropathy. So why couldn't VA take you at your word at 93 and saying what we're claiming is PVD?
Because the way I characterized that at that time, I was also misappropriating, well, not misappropriating, but incorrectly conceptualizing the issues that were before them at that time. The disabilities are distinct. That much I say. Vascular disease and neuropathy, while having current or same symptoms or similar overriding symptoms, are in fact distinct. I'm at a loss to what I said back at that time, but the application was for peripheral vascular disease, and I recall in 93 I added that additional claim for the separate disability, picking up that it had always existed before and that there was never a final decision before. Mr. Brokowski had never had notice of any decision on neuropathy before. I believe that is why, if my legal interpretation of or procedural aspect about it is incorrect, that can be faulted. But as far as any repercussions to Mr. Brokowski, there was no legal binding effect to characterization of what I did as to the issue. The claim was, it was established in 1978 with his statement. It was carried through. It was never a final decision. And it's the lack of notification to him, which is, I think, is the key fact in all of this. A lack of notification prior to that time, prior to 1994, of any adjudication or review, even regarding neuropathy, that is what is binding in this case. One other thing I wanted to clarify is that when I wrote that letter, I did not intend to say or try to say that he had peripheral neuropathy and now he has, he had vascular disease and now he has neuropathy. I did not say that. What I'm saying is that he had peripheral vascular disease, and now we have also become aware of peripheral neuropathy. So he had two distinct disabilities at that time. The neuropathy we had known had always existed. Now I was actually able to get a doctor to put the two words together here. They had described peripheral in Dr. French's statement in 1978, and he also described neuropathy in a separate fashion. I was able to get him to put those two words together, and now I got the VA's attention that there was a separate disability here. But nonetheless, it always existed back then.
Tell me why, as the Secretary argues, under the Federal Circuit's Boggs case, and I can't remember if we cited that in our order or not. Are you familiar with that case?
Not totally, Your Honor, just from what you...
Well, I'll try to paraphrase it. You're going to have to read the case yourself and see if I accurately state it to you. But an individual had a hearing problem. Filed a claim for a hearing based upon one diagnosis. And adjudicated that claim, it was denied. The veteran goes to a private physician or audiologist and says, yes, you do have a hearing disability, but the diagnosis is something, is different, a different diagnosis. But you do have this hearing problem. And so he comes back and files a new claim and says, okay, I've got this new diagnosis. I want you to adjudicate this. And this court said, hey, you've already had your shot. You just came in and you said had your hearing disability and it was adjudicated. And then the Federal Circuit, it was appealed. The Federal Circuit said, no. Two disabilities, you got two separate claims. So the Secretary argues that when, as I see it, when you came in with a peripheral neuropathy diagnosis specifically, after having filed this very specific letter about peripheral vascular disease, you were now actually filing a separate claim for peripheral neuropathy, and the date that was filed should be looked at to determine the effective date of the claim. Now, why is the Secretary wrong?
As I understand the way you described Boggs, in Boggs there was a misdiagnosis. There was a hearing problem, and they diagnosed whatever the diagnosis was, and then he came back with a hearing problem with another diagnosis. In this case, you don't have that. He had peripheral vascular disease, and he always had neuropathy. They both had always existed in this case, rather than Boggs, where we're just changing the hearing diagnosis. Here Boggs had one disability with hearing, whether you call it whatever diagnosis you use. In Mr. Rakowski's case, we have two separate disabilities, both existing at the time in 1978. I believe that is the distinction that has to be made from Boggs in this case. And again, I can direct the court's attention back again. This is a two-level analysis. We must find that there is, in fact, an informed claim, and then we can argue over what it is about. I've got to get you past the fact that he raised an informed claim in 1978. Otherwise, if I can't do that, then everything I'm saying now is just taking up your time. But what I think that with the time that I have left, if you were to ask me how I would decide this case and why, this is what I would tell you. The key to this case lies in the fact that there was no notification to Mr. Bukowski in 1978 for any review or adjudication of disability other than anxiety. That is a matter of law, that statement that he had made in 1978, that this is a claim for service connection for all disabilities of record, satisfied all three requirements of 3.155A, that there was a writing, there was a communication, and there was identification of the benefits that he was seeking. And as a matter of law, this was a claim, an informal claim, and that the failure on the board's part and the error that they committed was to fail to fully and sympathetically read the pleadings, that claim, which is 299 of the record, read that sentence and the medical evidence of record to show that there was, in fact, an informal claim. And even using the clearly erroneous standard here, that the informal claim will be based on neuropathy because the evidence, there was medical opinion and evidence of neuropathy in that file. And that is how I believe that the court can separate the issues in this case.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Judge.
Case is submitted. The panel will greet the counsel.
All rise. This honorable court is adjourned until further notice.